And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Moving forward, using all my breath. Making love to you was never second best. I saw the world thrashing all around your face. Never really knowing it was always mesh and lace. I'll stop the world and know the few. You've seen the difference and it's getting better.
Here at Quark's, customer satisfaction is our primary concern.
I'd say we just found our way into a wormhole.
I'm Kira Norris.
Lieutenant Commander Worf, reporting for duty, sir.
You're the best crew any captain ever had. This may be the last time we're all together.
This will shortly become a leading center of commerce and of scientific exploration. And for Starfleet, one of our most important posts.
It is quite simply, Commander. The journey you have always been destined to take.
Sensors are not functioning.
You've lost all contact with the space station.
What the hell is happening out there?
Shields up. Damage report.
Battle stations.
I'm Captain Benjamin Sisko. Welcome to Deep Space Nine.
Listen to the prophets. A Deep Space Nine Two True Freaks presentation with Sean Engel and Andrew Layla.
And now with 100% more Paul Spataro.
Hello, everyone, and thank you once again for making the wise decision to download and listen to the Prophets, a Star Trek Deep Space Nine podcast hosted by the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Network and still disavowed by Scott Gardner.
Is he like the secretary in Mission Impossible?
Pretty much.
We have been disavowed. Oh, I do like that.
However, we're still working on trying to get Chris Honeywell on as a guest host, so eventually one of the freaks will at least have to acknowledge our existence in some manner. But all of that aside, if this is your first time on the show, we'd like to say welcome. Our mission statement here is simple. We're covering the entirety of episodes, the underappreciated entry into Star Trek canon, Deep Space Nine, in episode release order, and giving you our thoughts, criticisms, and insights into the show. And in today's show, we're covering the 17th episode of the series, The Forsaken, a program which includes annoying Starfleet dignitaries, a space probe wreaking havoc on the station, and Loxana Troi. Oh, dear God. But never fear, podcast listeners, as I, Sean Engel, will help guide you through another show featuring the overly amorous Betazoid with the assistance of my superior officers, Admiral Paul Spataro.
Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on when you listen to this.
And Fleet Commander Andrew Leyland.
Hello. Sorry, distracted by the cat. I am the Dr. Bill of this ship. I've been distracted by the cat.
Oh,
I was distracted. A moth was going by.
No, she's playing with a tube of sweets. She seems to be trying to get one out, but I'd love to watch her with a wine gum.
Tube of sweets? Is that a euphemism?
No, it's okay. Tube of polos.
Oh, okay.
Mint. So she seems to be trying to get one out of the packet. But that's neither here nor there.
Yeah, but before we start off the show, we'd like to go ahead and take a chance to open up the email bag and read an email. Would someone like to read this first email?
Incoming transmission.
All right. Paul, Andy, and Sean. Ah, Wallace Shawn. I don't think he's done a bad job ever, and he has a license to go over the top in this one. Priceless. The Ferengi world building in this one is great, and the spotlight on Quark and Rom is wonderful. Like you guys said, this is really the first time we see Rom as more than Nog's father, and he becomes one of the better secondary characters. Then there's the whole Jake and Nog story, which changes Sisko's mind on the friendship. This episode really helps the background characters. As to the Godfather homage, I loved it. I was waiting for Enzo the Ferengi to show up later. Gene. P.S. Dr. Bill? Really? You have Dr. Bill on before me. How many Star Trek fan films has he made, huh? Fine, I know what I'm not wanted. Who am I kidding? I've got a TTF listening habit. You're not getting rid of me that easily.
Yes, surprisingly, we're not getting rid of you at all, as we would like to welcome to the show the podcaster extraordinaire, Mr. Gene the Dancing Machine Hendrix.
Permission to come aboard?
Granted.
How's it going, guys?
Really good. Thanks for coming on the show. Thanks for, Dr. Bill, inviting yourself on the show and getting a chance to come on. We're glad to have you here.
Oh, I'm glad to be here. You guys doing this show has made me rewatch DS9, and I forgot how much I loved the show. So thank you very much for that.
Well, good. I'm glad, because that's kind of, I'm certain that's essentially what everyone who does these sort of, casting their memory back type shows, like with Star Trek Monthly Monday and Star Wars Monthly Monday, it's getting to spotlight these things that we loved when we were younger and, try and get it out there. And the fact that we're getting people to go and rewatch this and maybe even reassess it is it's not one of the main emphasis of the show, but it's nice to hear that there are people who are getting inspired to go back and watch it.
I think you need to work on your plural versus singular. We're getting person to go back and watch.
No, oh. Because my wife watches with me, so yeah, plural.
Okay, there All you right. go.
Well, that's significantly more than I actually expected. That's probably significantly more than I... See, I was thinking more of my show, and that's where it comes down to the singular. So there you go.
You know what would actually make me very happy about that is if you said your wife and your daughter were watching it. If we were somehow inspiring a new generation to watch it, that would be truly gratifying.
Now, she tends to see...
Just burst my balloon.
Well, she tends to see Star Trek and... Oh, again, I'll be in my room. And she's six.
I'm not surprised. My kids are kind of like that, too. My kids are older than six.
So before we go into the talk of the show, do we have any Star Trek news we want to try and, because we're so topical and on point with this, do we have some Star Trek news we want to get out there?
Well, the hot topic news that will still be hot topic news by the time this episode goes up is that apparently Simon Pegg is writing Star Trek 3. Co-writing Star Trek 3.
Yeah, according to IMDb, which, is the sort of Wikipedia of movie information, Simon Pegg is supposed to be writing it, and along with the main writer being this guy named Doug Young, or Jung, depending upon how you pronounce his name. Young has written a couple episodes of Banshee. Now, what's that show about, Andy? I haven't watched that one.
Banshee is about a crook who goes to jail, who comes out of jail to return to his hometown. But at a bar outside of town, the new sheriff is there, who is killed by two hoods. The crook takes on the identity of the new sheriff because the people in the town have never actually seen him, and therefore the crook is now in charge of the town as the sheriff, that isn't who he is, so that he can get back the money that he hidden, that he went to jail for, while simultaneously taking on the big crime lord who he went to jail for, whose daughter he was shagging, because both of them betrayed the crime lord to steal this money. It's pretty high concept.
Wow, that sounds like a very convoluted yet interesting idea for a show. If
Banshee's not bad, it's nowhere near in Breaking Bad's league, but it's perfectly serviceable if you're in the mood.
Hmm. Well,
I think you're getting into the it's not yours territory if you want to.
Well, let's hope it's a little better, because first of all, I think as much as you may say about who what's his name, Justin Lin, who's going to be directing the next Star Trek movie, and his pedigree only being the being primarily the Fast and Furious movies, it does kind of say that this movie will still probably go in the more action heavy feel. But I think getting Simon Pegg on to do some of the screenwriting is really a great thing. He does some spectacular genre stuff. His work with Edgar Wright, especially in Spaced and the Coronado films of Hot Fuzz and Shaun of the Dead and The World's End, especially The World's End, which I've gotten a chance to rewatch a couple of times, and it's just incredibly clever. It is perhaps, I know Thomas DJ mentioned this, he thinks it's perhaps the best John Carpenter film done by John Carpenter in possibly decades. So he knows his genre stuff, and I think having Simon Pegg on for screenwriting will definitely help the film.
Yeah, I think, because the guy knows his stuff. I think we've established that. It's going to be interesting how he works within the framework of Star Trek, though. Because Shaun of the Dead was, yes, it was a loving homage slash spoof, but he wasn't working within any particular confines other than those of the zombie genre. And even then, if he wanted to blow them up, he could do. And with Hot Fuzz, he was spoofing police movies and detective movies and Lethal Weapon films and stuff. But he still did it within the confines of making a film that worked in and of itself. Now, whether he's going to be able to rein that in slightly, that spoof element, and write something within the rigid confines of a Star Trek story is the only question that I have. I thought, oh, well, all right then, maybe this one's going to be good, when I saw that he was announced as writer. So I think it's got possibility. I was quite pleased with it.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with you that as long as he reins it in a little, I don't want this to be a Star Trek spoof. But if it's just adding some levity to it, and the one thing I would say from the first two movies is it really, really looks like Simon Pegg is having a ball playing Scotty. And if he's going to translate that to his script, as long as he doesn't get too silly with it, I'm kind of on board to give him a shot.
What about you, Gene? You know, I've noticed most of the time, Gene, that you've been sort of the detractor for the Abrams Trek. Do you have any thoughts about Simon Pegg coming on as writer?
It can't get any worse.
Now,
I
hate to tell you this, Gene, but it can.
I don't know.
It can always get worse, trust me. Every time you think things can't get worse, somebody comes out and tries to prove you wrong.
True. I'm just interested to see what he's going to do with the Genesis plant in this one.
I seriously don't think they're going to try and follow the framework of the first three films. I think they need to just... You know, that was the one thing that I think Into Darkness had going against it, is that they felt that they need to follow up the first version of this new Star Trek franchise with Star Trek II.
Well, here's my issue with the Abrams films. I'll just do this one little thing, then cut off the grumpy old fan act. The first movie, the first Abrams movie, was a concept that had gotten shelved 5 times. They did Star Trek the Motion Picture. Then someone at Paramount said, you know, it might be a good idea to see Kirk and Spock at the Academy. No, that's dumb. Let's do something else. And every time there was a new movie, that's the idea that came out. Till J.J. Abrams apparently wasn't a stupid idea. Then, in this brand new universe where they could do anything, literally any story they wanted to do, they remade the greatest Star Trek film ever. I'm done.
Okay. So even if, you know, even if this turns out to make the next show more like, or the next movie more like Star Trek, do you think you'll probably be passing over it, or at least waiting till it comes to video, or...
I'm probably just going to pass over it completely. It's, in my opinion, it's trying to fix something that is incredibly flawed. It's the fourth season of Enterprise, which the first three seasons... I'm sorry if anyone here really enjoys them. I thought we're just looked at the original series and said, boy, those things are stupid. We're not going to do anything like they did there. And then the fourth season comes around. We, you know, they may have had some great stories, but it was too far gone to fix.
I tend to disagree with you on that. I enjoyed Enterprise. But then, you know, I'm the guy who, you know, who didn't dislike these Star Trek movies.
There you go.
You're just far too reasonable, Paul, is what it is. Hmm. My thing with Enterprise, I think I was just turned off from the beginning that it seemed like a prequel to the motion picture, not the original series. And there was a part of me that was, am I judging this because it's not what I wanted it to be? Which when it was first announced, I got genuinely excited about Enterprise because I honestly thought they were going to do Robert April or better, Christopher Pike.
Right.
I thought they were going, oh, even better, in my head, they would do 5 years of Robert April, and then at the end of season 5, he would abdicate captaincy, and for 2 seasons, we'd get Christopher Pike. And I thought we were going to get a genuine prequel series to the original, with all the bells and whistles that the cage had, and I was genuinely pleased with it. And then I remembered Rick Berman and Brannon Braga are in charge of this, and the dismissal of the original is well known. And I watched a kind of like half the first season and then gave in because it just wasn't what I wanted it to be. And it was, like Gene says, I agree with what he said. It's like they looked at the original and said, well, that's stupid. And it's like, no, that stupid thing is why you are now millionaires. And Berman has gone on record as saying, look, Paramount were going to do Enterprise as a prequel, whether we were involved or not. And I honestly think at that point they should have said, okay, go your own way, no harm, no foul, bye. And maybe if, I don't know, Gar and Judith Reeve Stevens had come in from the beginning, maybe Enterprise would have been salvageable. But I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Voyager's any good either, but I know Luke Giaconetti loves it, and I respect Luke's opinion. But, you know, it just wasn't for me.
No, I can get behind that. The dismissal and the change that Enterprise took did sort of, especially since it hung so fervently to that during the first couple of seasons, did turn a lot of old-time fans who, probably like you were, Andy, were hoping that it would be a natural, you know, prequel to the Star Trek series. The fact that it did its own thing did kind of distress a lot of old-time fans, and probably was one of the reasons why that once it finally did get good in like the third and fourth season, started to introduce that what was the temporal, after the temporal war and all that, what was the race?
The Zindi,
yeah. Once it started to introduce that and them going after that, was, you know, it became interesting again. And the unfortunate thing is, you know, once you said what Reeves, who were the people who were writing?
Garfield and Judith Reeve Stevens, yes, came up in the fourth season.
Supposedly the ideas that they were having for the fifth season, if it were ever to go to that, was to start working into the Federation Romulan conflict, which I thought would have been really interesting. But unfortunately, you know, they had built up such animosity with the first couple of seasons.
I think the thing as well that really smacked me about the face, enough people have said the fourth season of Enterprise is good, that I went back and I watched a couple. I watched the last one, which I thought was fucking appalling. Sorry, you're going to have to put a thingy or tab on this, but it was a dreadful final episode. But then I watched the Mirror Universe one, and I'm watching the Mirror Universe two-parter and going, you know, I'm looking at this and I'm going, there is absolutely nothing wrong with the design aesthetic of the original show.
Right.
This looks better than what we've been watching for 4 years. You know, all that monochrome, tedious Space 1999 type design of everything being metallic and everyone wearing boring colours. And then they did the Mirror Universe episode and Bacula looks brilliant in Kirk's green wraparound tunic. And Taboobs looks brilliant in the miniskirt. And what's her name? The other girl who's on Enterprise, I forget her name now. Linda Park, she looked fantastic in that Marlena Moreau Mirror Mirror two-piece thing. And you're looking at it and you're watching it going, why did you not do this in the beginning? There is nothing wrong with this. Maybe in the 60s shows, because of the lighting and the cameras and all that stuff, it looks a bit chintzy now. But if we've learned nothing from that two-parter and from Trials and Tribulations, there is nothing wrong with that 60s design aesthetic. Because let's not forget, NASA designed that bridge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it was just, you know, too little too late, and that's kind of what damned Enterprise, but, you know, it's what it is.
Yeah, I mean, I remember, like, Enterprise took a little while to get rolling, as did virtually every Trek series except for the original. My probably weakness, I guess, is that, to me, even bad Trek is better than no Trek. And I'm always willing to give it a shot and kind of slog through the slower episodes to get to when it gets good. And I did think Enterprise got good as it went on. And I find Scott Bakula to be a, you know, very charismatic actor.
Bakula was
pretty good, particularly.
Bakula was brilliant.
Yeah, I think Dr. Phlox was a really good character. You know, I enjoyed the show, and, you know, if people disagree, that's okay.
No, it's not. It's how much better would it have been if Bakula was Robert April, then?
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with you there. I think it's not that the show, not that I'm arguing the show was perfect and didn't need improvement, but I thought the season where they did this in the mission was really solid, and I thought those Dark Universe episodes were really solid. And I think
the thing I loved about them was it was like yesterday's Enterprise, wasn't it? There was no explanation for what was going on. Even the opening credits were different.
Yeah,
they were two brilliant episodes.
Mm-hmm. And see, but that's what I was saying before. It was just too little too late. If they would have started out like this, if this would have been something they would have done in the first season, that would have, you know, I think that would have energized fans, and I think Enterprise would be far more well regarded. You know, unfortunately, they had to have Behrman and Piller sort of, you know, which I think they had been on the show for too long. They needed some new blood, and that's what doomed Enterprise. You know, it's the only Star Trek The Next Generation show that didn't make it to 7 seasons, which, you know, I don't know if we can lay it on Behrman and Piller, but I'm certain we can probably...
It's not Piller. Michael Piller was nothing to do with Enterprise.
Oh,
you're thinking of Brannon Braga,
yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Well, there was a conversation. Now, do we want to address anything in Gene's email about the Negus, or do we want to go ahead and go on to the...
You did address something. I'm here.
Oh, yeah, you are. That's surprising, yes. Thanks for coming on the show, Gene. We appreciate that. So do we want to go ahead and head into our discussion in today's episode?
Yeah, why the hell not?
Its galaxy is uncharted.
This probe may represent contact with a new species.
Its purpose is unknown.
From Reactor 2 has just been shut down.
What?
Its power is unstoppable.
Whatever it is, it's slowly disabling our station.
And its first victim is Odo.
You happen to know the schedule of his regenerative cycle?
My God, I have no idea.
It's beginning. No one has ever seen me like this before.
On the next episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Okay.
For me.
All right. This one is The Forsaken, and it was the 17th episode of Season 1 of Deep Space Nine, and aired on or about the 23rd of May on 1993. The episode was written by Don Carlos Dunaway and Michael Piller from a story by Jim Trombetta, and was directed by Les Lando. The regular cast was joined by Constant Towers as Ambassador Taxco, Michael Ensign as Ambassador Lojal, Jack Shearer as Ambassador Vadosia, these silly names, and Major Barrett as Ambassador Troy. And as usual, my synopsis comes from the Star Trek Deep Space Nine Companion by Terry J. Erdman and Paula M. Block. When Deep Space Nine is, quote-unquote, honored with a visit from a delegation of Federation ambassadors on a fact-finding mission to the wormhole, Sisko places the assignment of shepherding them about in Dr. Bashir's hands. While three of the ambassadors pester Bashir with constant requests, the fourth, Loxana Troy, oh my god, the Betazoid mother of Starship Enterprise counselor Deanna Troy, proves to be far more self-sufficient, at least when it comes to finding her own entertainment. After Odo helps her recover a Latinum hair brooch stolen during a Dabo game at Quark's, Loxana is impressed. So impressed that she sets her sights on making the shapeshifter a close personal friend. Wink. As Bashir escorts the other three ambassadors around the station, a frustrated O'Brien tries to deal with the station's uncooperative Cardassian computer. At the same time, Kira notes the arrival through the wormhole of an unidentified alien space probe. Cautious, despite his curiosity about the object, Sisko has it towed into a position a few hundred meters from the docking ring and asks O'Brien to set up a computer interface that will allow them to download information from the probe. Elsewhere on the station, Loxana, dressed to kill, tracks down Odo and attempts to flirt with him. Odo nervously puts her off and heads for ops, where he tries to get Sisko to do something about the problem. Sisko, however, is amused rather than concerned, and he offers Odo only the advice to treat the situation, quote-unquote, delicately. A short time later, Odo encounters Loxana on the promenade. Although he tries to retreat into a turbolift, Loxana follows him. Suddenly, the power to the pylon in the turbolift fails, as does the transporter, and the two are trapped together, which Loxana takes as the perfect opportunity to get to know Odo better. In ops, O'Brien is puzzled by the breakdowns and subsequent malfunctions all over the station. He points out to Sisko that the computer's personality seems to change as they downloaded the information for the probe. It has become more obedient, but seems to crave constant attention, like a child, or a puppy, of course. The ops officers discuss the possibility that they may have actually downloaded some kind of non-biological life form into the computer. Unfortunately, there doesn't seem to be any way to communicate with it directly. And when O'Brien tries to upload the transmitted files back to the probe, the station computer balks and creates further breakdowns. In the turbolift, a weary Odo, who is quickly approaching the point where he must allow his body to revert to its natural liquid state, slowly lets down his guard in response to Loxana's constant barrage of friendly chatter and shares some personal revelations about his past. Touched by his candor and vulnerability, Loxana shares some revelations about her own, convincing him that he can trust her enough to be himself, in every sense of the word. Odo allows himself to liquefy. Locke then catches him in her skirt, creating an improvised basin to safely contain him. O'Brien continues to work on the computer problem, this time attempting to manually transfer the probe's data, but the effort triggers a plasma explosion in the station's guest quarters, trapping Bashir and the other three ambassadors in a fiery corridor. Realizing that the alien life form, which O'Brien is now referring to as the Pop, doesn't want to leave, O'Brien creates a sub-program that can safely house it, a doghouse, so to speak. The strategy works, and the station's systems come back online. In the fire-scorched corridor, Sisko and Kira find Bashir resourcefully managed to save himself and the ambassadors by leading them into a wall component to wait out the conflagration. Odo, once again in humanoid form, and Loxana are retrieved from the turbo lift. As they part, Loxana suggests that they'll have more time to discover about each other the next time that they meet. And back in Ops, O'Brien promises Sisko that he will keep his new pet happy, busy, and out of trouble from now on. We go with the synopsis, okay? Who wants to go first on their thoughts about this?
Last week we ended with, oh dear, it's a Loxana try episode. And then I watched it and was gobsmacked that it was a good Loxana try episode. This is really, really, really quite good. She's brilliant in it. René Auberjonois's brilliant in it. There's some great writing between the two of them. The other two subplots, O'Brien and the life form that's come into the computer, and Bashir and the diplomats, don't quite work as well as Loxana and Odo, although it is fun to watch O'Brien squirm, and it's fun watching Sisko watching O'Brien squirm.
Of course, Andy meant to say Bashir rather than O'Brien. Now, this is the first time I've had to correct him on the show.
So again, some great performances from those two. It was a surprisingly entertaining episode. Now, I don't know whether that's because I was expecting nothing from it, because it's a Loxana Troi episode, or whether it is genuinely good. So I'm hoping you three are going to be able to shed some light on that. But yeah, surprisingly entertaining. Very, very, very good.
If my memory is correct, I had gotten a head start on this, and I had already watched it by the time we recorded last time. And when we mentioned it, I said, oh, hold off, give this one a chance. I think you may be surprised. And I totally agree with you that it's the Loxana Troi aspect of the episode is the shining star in here, because the other plots are superfluous almost, except for a little bit of the acting, as you pointed out. It is fun to see O'Brien be all, you know, put upon, and it was kind of fun to see Bashir being put upon as well, although the ambassadors seemed a little annoying, even to me. The whole Loxana Troi thing started out seeming like it was going to be a repeat of what they did on The Next Generation, with her following Picard around and him trying to avoid her and all of that. But then the scene on the turbo lift just elevated it so high, with the incredibly good acting by the two of them. And not only good acting, also giving us insight into Odo's character and his physical as well as emotional person. Really, really enjoyable overall. I'm not going to say it's one of my top episodes of the season, but for a Loxana Troi episode, woo, this is good.
Yeah, I'll have to again. This is going to be one of these episodes where I think we concur. I think, essentially, this could have been a really average episode, and with the addition of Loxana Troi, it could have been a kind of negative episode. But the relationship, especially at the scenes of Loxana and Odo in the turbo lift, elevate this episode to a much better one than you would have expected. The sequences with Bashir and O'Brien are negligible, forgettable, really. The whole idea of, oh, it's a space probe and, you know, it's infecting our computers, that's not uncommon for Star Trek. The diplomats on the station being so annoying, that also seems out of place, but it does give Bashir an opportunity to squirm, which I'm always glad to see, because for this first season, Bashir has been the bane of the show, and not as in, you know, speaking under his voice and trying to break Batman's back, but he's just been completely annoying throughout the show, and the fact that he has to deal with these annoying characters and try and keep them from, you know, keep them happy and keep them from getting in the way, I really enjoyed that aspect. I think what, like I said, what makes this show great, surprisingly, is Majel Barrett and Renee Auberjonois and their relationship, that they get to play off each other. Gene?
Well, why don't we make it unanimous? Because I really enjoyed this episode. What they did is they took the standard stuck-in-an-elevator story and they actually used it to good effect, because I believe that we get more about Lwaxana's background in this episode than all of her TNG appearances. Because you get to know why she acts the way she does. And it helps with Odo, because we get, why does he look like that? Why is his hair this way? Why doesn't he like to socialize? You get all that in here. Now, the other, like you guys said, the other plots, eh. Although there is a long-standing tradition of Federation officials coming on to a Star Trek ship, station, whatever, being single-minded and annoying. So I wasn't really put off by that. It was basically, you know, par for the course. One thing I did like, whatever other subplots were going on, if Sisko was involved, it was terrific, because he had these facial expressions or the change in the tone of his voice that just, it shows you how good Avery Brooks actually is as an actor. Especially when the ambassadors come on into ops for the first time and he's facing away from him, and you see his facial expressions like, ah, crap, I couldn't get away in time.
Yeah, that is brilliant. When he's got his face towards the audience and his face is just really in downbeat and, oh, for God's sake. And then when he turns around, he's just got the biggest grin on it. Oh, Ambassador, it's nice to see you.
And I love how he also does that with Bashir. It's like, you know, mm-hmm. Yes, I particularly chose you to do this. And it's like, are you punishing me? Oh, sure. You know, Dax used to do this to me as well. So this is your time to catch some shit. So I enjoyed the heck. Yeah, it's Avery Brooks was great during this. And he, you know, he gets times where he gets to act during the show, but this time I loved the, because this was something I would do, you know, if I had to deal with someone who annoys the hell out of me, you know, whenever they walk away or I turn my back, I would always roll my eyes or, mm-hmm. you know, just completely be annoyed with them. So Brooks does a great job with that.
My only problem with the Dr. Bashir plot is the station's doctor. Does he not have anything better to do with his time?
Well, he's still a first-year officer, so there are some things that they have to do.
You know, right, so who's doing the doctoring?
Well, presumably there's not only one doctor on board of
the station. Yeah, you'd think that about all the Star Trek shows, but we only ever see other doctors very briefly.
Yeah, we true, but they're not part of the cast, but at least in theory they are part of the crew. We just don't see them because they're not part of the cast.
Yeah, there's a staff there.
All right, okay.
And it's interesting that apparently Bashir is competent when he's not on camera.
Yeah, that was a weak point as well, that we didn't get to see him win them over. I mean, I get that's not the point of the story. The point of the story is fleshing out Odo and, to a certain extent, Lwaxana, who, yeah, like Gene said, gets more development here than she's done on, what are we at, in Star Trek Next Generation at this point, 4 seasons of that show. So, yeah, but suddenly they all crawl out of the Jeffries tube thing and they're all, oh, Julian's a lovely man. And you're like, how did you come to that conclusion?
I think part of my theory on Lwaxana and why she's more entertaining on this is because they didn't have to tie her to Deanna. I think that, you know, being able to just write her as her own character instead of writing her as a character's annoying mother I think that actually added to it, and that made it better. It made her seem like her own person.
Mm-hmm.
Based on this performance, you know, she really did some good acting here, which I can't say I ever got that impression from any other performance, whether it was as Luoxana on this or as Nurse Chapel.
Oh yeah.
I can't say I ever was left with that impression, but I also don't think she was ever given a role that called for any real acting. So this is the first time, and I think she hit it out of the park.
Oh yeah. She's good in Westworld.
Who was she in Westworld?
She is the owner of the bar in Cowboy Land.
Really? I didn't realize that. I love that Angel movie. Barrett. I never realized it.
I love Westworld. She doesn't really have a lot to do other than be the mom of the bar, but she's good in it. I think it's the only thing I've seen her in that isn't Star Trek.
Well, next time I see it, I'll have to pay attention. But that was I saw that. Unlike you guys, I saw that movie theater as a kid, and I love that movie.
I love Westworld as well. I think she's probably Dr. Bashir's favorite ambassador, because she'd rather spend all her time in Quark's bar than bugging him.
Right.
Is that it? Have we exhausted this episode?
No, I've got some other notes here. You know, I'd like to talk a little bit about the conversation that they had in the shaft.
Excuse me? Well,
Odo's shaft.
In Odo's, some of the best TV shows have done trap two characters in a room together, mm-hmm. and just let them go at each other. And Magnum did a brilliant one, where Magnum and Higgins got trapped in an elevator. It's an absolutely brilliant episode. And this is just that. I mean, initially you are stuck with, oh god, they just trapped two characters in a lift. But then the drama comes from, if Odo doesn't get out on time, he just melts.
Mm-hmm.
Go on.
It plays into that really well. You know, it allows the two characters to eventually revert to their most primal, you know, there is no superficiality between them. They get to open up and be who they are, and that's a great character moment. But not only do they get to do that, do these great dramatic beats, they also get some hilarious comedic beats. You know, Odo talking to Luoxana, saying, you know, this isn't a mouth, this is, I don't have a digestive system, you know, I'm essentially liquid, and, you know, Luoxana comes back with the comment, I can swim. and then later on in the conversation, where Odo's getting a bit more antsy about having to change, and Luoxana's, you know, droning on and on about her meeting with the Ferengi captain, having to sleep with him and all this, and he's heard prior to this that he can't get out of the turbolift shaft because it's electrocuted. And, you know, after listening to her talk for a couple of minutes about this, you know, Luoxana looks at him and goes, you know, what's going on? What are you looking at? And he goes, oh, I was just wondering how many volts are running through the the circuits there. It's just, it's very cleverly written. There's a lot of humor and a lot of drama in that. And I think that's the one thing that I took away from this episode that, you know, entertained me the most.
See, the thing I took away from it is Luoxana is every bit the loner that Odo is. She just handles it differently.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Rather than being introverted and being obsessed with the job, she's extroverted and tries to cover up her loneliness with
flamboyance.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas he hides behind his job. But he still tells his greatest nemesis, Quark, he still tells him intimate things that he wouldn't say to other people.
Well, it's like his greatest nemesis and his best friend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And well, I think slowly as the first seasons develop, we've seen that Quark and Odo may actually like each other.
Now, well, is the 16-hour limit on Odo, is it that at some point during every 16-hour interval he has to turn to water, or liquid rather, excuse me, or is it that at 16 hours he has to do it?
I think
if he does it 3 hours in, does that start the clock ticking?
I think that resets the clock. Once he's in his natural state, he then has 16 more hours. So I would think he would normally want to, you know, cut it off at like 14 or 15. But 16 is the hard limit. He cannot maintain a shape other than his liquid form for more than 16 hours.
I kind of wish they had said about 16 hours. Because it just sounds like there's a clock ticking down, and somehow his physiological state is aware of a clock, and it's going to convert at exactly when it goes from 59 to 60. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and I don't like that.
Although I got the impression from the episode he's beyond 16 hours when she finally opens up the folds of her dress. I got the impression he's now past that 16-hour limit and he's desperately trying to hold it together. So the feeling for me was he can go over that if he absolutely has to, but he can't do it for very long. Well, that was my feeling.
I've never,
anyway.
Never ever had a woman unfold the folds of her dress for me in under 16 hours.
See, what I like about this, you know, even whether the 16-hour thing is kind of wonky or arbitrary, I like where this plays up, and this will be used to great effect in later episodes, especially when we get into more with the Dominion, because there will be manipulation of Odo to where he's passed long beyond, where I think there's some torturing with, I can't remember. I know it's some Cardassian, but they torture him long past his 16-hour point, and it's a great torture idea that they use for this. So I like the seeding of this in the, you know, early in the episode, that he has limitations to him having to be a solid form. Mm-hmm. Do we have any other notes or anything, or are we?
Well, the only thing I got out of the O'Brien plot was this is why you're supposed to know how to operate things manually and not rely on the computer constantly.
Hmm. Yeah, well, is this computer virus thing ever mentioned again?
I don't believe so.
I don't think it is.
Yeah, Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. Sure.
Oh, the only thing I had about this was, you know, it did have a very 2001 kind of feel, especially at the end of it, where they're pulling out little data rods and the computer's suddenly slowing down and everything. You know,
yeah, they should have had it singing a song.
If it would have been singing Daisy, I think that would have been perfect. But yeah, go ahead, Paul.
I think that was a subplot that was they were well advised to just let it go. I don't think there was anywhere to go on that to revisit it down the line.
Just a line in season 6 when they have to evacuate the station. Just O'Brien at a console going blip, 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 and somebody says, "What are you doing?" He says, "Oh, I'm just downloading the program to this handheld pad thing. I'll want to be a minute."
Yeah, I'm just transferring the pop or something like that.
Yeah, just something like that would have been nice. But yeah, it doesn't matter.
90% of the people watching wouldn't have remembered what that was, and it probably would have created more questions than answers there. So I'm going to respectfully disagree with you on that one.
Respectfully? This is the first time for everything.
Yeah.
Well, I say respectfully. You know I don't mean it.
Yes, we do. I like the beginning where Laxana grabs hold of Quark's ears when we know exactly what the ears are an analog for.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she even mentions that. She even mentions, you know, she knows what she's doing while she's grabbing his ears. So, yeah,
there you go. When she tightens her grip.
Ooh. Okay, so... Truncate silence. Do we have anything else we want to say about that?
What about Laxana grabbing
on
the balls?
No, we have nothing more to say about that.
No, I have nothing more to say. It's pretty eye-watering.
I will have to agree.
My only note on it, when they were in the elevator and Odo starts melting, how come his clothes don't start melting?
Well, I think that was one of the things they discussed in the companion, was the stuff that they applied to Odo's face and hands would have ruined the because Odo's clothes are actually in real life clothing, and if they would have applied that to the clothing, since they had a limited budget on that, and I think they only had one set of the Odo's uniform, they really couldn't do that, or they really didn't want to do that, so.
What's this real life of which you speak?
Yeah, I know. It's hard to imagine that, you know, we actually
have to do
that.
That's getting really, really penny-pinching to me, I think.
But, well, you know, I'm certain that they try and penny-pinch everywhere, but yeah.
We have mentioned before on the show the pilot was horrendously over budget, so maybe making a couple of extra costumes by this point in the season was out of the budget range. Maybe by season two they've made him a couple of spur ones.
Yeah, I don't know if, I'm trying to remember, because they obviously do address the idea of Odo, you know, getting to the 16-hour point and, you know, starting to have that sort of incredible melting man thing go on. I don't know if they do that with the costume, you know, in later seasons. But yeah, it is one of those things, like, yeah, his uniform is part of his body. Why doesn't it get all melty and everything?
Well, they do in the later seasons when there's that disease that affects the changelings. I do specifically remember the leader of the Dominion changelings, that as she started to deteriorate, so did her clothing.
Okay.
Right.
So I guess this is something that will be inconsistent, but I guess it's, you know, not a major point, so we can forgive it.
Yeah, you know, it would have been nice, but I think this is first season. They've said budget-wise they couldn't afford another costume or another uniform for Odo, so it's negligible. It doesn't ruin the episode, but it is one of those things that you can...
No, it was just a nitpicky thing that, yeah. I'm watching going, well, if his clothes are part of him, his clothes don't appear to be melted. I was only being nitpicky. I don't mean it seriously.
Oh, no.
Well, apparently his communicator is also a part of him, but that works.
And he can take that off, apparently. Yeah. So
let's not go quite too far down that road, okay?
Yeah. Yeah, we could get all kinds of nitpicky, I'm certain, if we wanted to. So, do we want to go ahead and give ratings for this one? Who wants to go first?
I'll go first.
Let the guest go first.
All right.
I'm assuming I have a column on the spreadsheet.
Yes. We have a column.
You have Dr. Bill's column.
Yes, we have guests' ratings, so
okay.
You will be in the rating for the show.
Well, just to let you guys know how I mentally went about this, is I started it at 3, and then went up or down from there, depending. And just all the stuff with Odo and Lwaxana, that brought it up. I mean, the other stuff was kind of average. Avery Brooks's acting was above the average, though. But I ended up at a solid 4 bars for this one.
Nice. Okay, well, I'll go ahead and go next. My thought for average is a 2.5. It's middle of the road.
Hmm.
You know, that's just, you know, that's an average episode. I'm gonna give this a 3. I'm certain there are better episodes out there, and I'm looking at some of the other episodes I've given 3 and 3.5s to, and I think this is an average episode, especially the stuff with Bashir and O'Brien. Those things are negligible and really didn't carry any weight for me in the episode, but the interaction between Lwaxana and Odo was what brought this up, so I'm going to go ahead and just give it a 3 here.
Yeah, not a lot of disagreement here. I agree. I think the Lwaxana part of it was what brought it up. And even at that, to be honest with you, it's really at the end that it brings it up. It's not as if when we get to that end scene, we're saying, oh, good, another scene with Lwaxana. And the other two stories, the acting is fine, but the stories don't feel particularly creative or innovative or interesting. So I'm going to go with a 3. I'm going to say it's an average episode, and it's slightly boosted by the Lwaxana scene in the turbo lift.
Yeah, I'm going to go with a solid 3 as well. As a Star Trek episode, it's average. It's entertaining. As we've said before, if you're channel surfing and you come across this one, would you leave it on? Yes, I would. So that's always a good indicator. I disagree slightly. I think the Bashir Sisko stuff elevates it as well. It's the characterization that elevates this one. Yeah, the O'Brien plot's weak, but Bashir, particularly the scene where Sisko says, yeah, I used to get these jobs all the time, and now I'm giving them to you. And Bashir says to him, well, how did you get out of them? He said, oh, I punched an ambassador once. But I don't recommend you do that. And Bashir actually does, Alexander Siddig does some good acting there, because his face, he actually does look like he thinks about it for a minute, and then goes, oh, damn. And it's like Sisko's reacting to his face. And so those two, plus Lwaxana and Odo, elevate it character-wise. But yeah, plot-wise, it's just routine. So yeah, solid 3 bars.
Okay. Sorry, I was muted there for a second. Adding to the
spreadsheet. You've fallen asleep.
No, I'm adding to the spreadsheet. I'm honestly actually working here. Despite the fact that it's early in the morning, I've had my coffee, so I'm tweaking right now.
So I'm on my second
cup of coffee. Three threes and a four?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were all... Let me look. The only time so far that we've had... we've had two times so far this season a consensus between all of us. The first one was for the pilot episode, Emissary, which we all gave fours, and the next time was for Babel, which we all gave twos. Otherwise, we really haven't had any real consensus on the show, so if you're looking for us to be contrarian, this is not the show that you're wanting to listen to, I guess.
Oh, shut up.
And with that, Andy, what do we have next time coming up on the show?
Next time on an all-new episode of Listen to the Prophets, Star Trek does the Naked Time again.
Is it going to be... Are we going to have to be comparing this to Jaws? It's not.
Well,
Jaws.
It's no Jaws.
It's definitely no Jaws. Okay, well, thanks everyone for listening. We'll catch you next time. Uh-oh. For the love of God, you can say goodbye.
Goodbye!
Come on, get out of here. What are you hanging out for?
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks. If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
Am I up? What?
I don't know. I'm sorry. I'm not up.
You lazy work shy fop. I've been in the gym already.
You can shut your pie hole.
Already.
Yeah.
Was it noon?
11.
Oh, it's early. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you drag me out of bed on a Sunday. You reconvene at the last minute because one of you's got something to do. You've got no respect whatsoever.
Let's see. Gene, I like your outfit. Would you like to take a place of one of our podcasters on the show from now on? I'd be fine with that.
And it's my turn. Two sessions ago, Andy was sick. Last session, Sean, you were sick. Now it's my turn.
Oh, lovely.
Oh boy.
So, Gene, you coming back in 2 weeks?
Which email of mine are you talking about? So
let's see. Inbox, it was the Negus.
Oh, the one that got me on the show. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What's the password again? All right,
so it's the
same as the
it's the same as the.
Gene knows he's going to be stealing our emails.
He's going to be sending us spam now, left and right. Well, he should be able to pull up his own.
I'm looking at my sent email, yeah, so I'm just going to read from that.
So
yeah, but now you heard.
You mean what I send you isn't spam anyway?
Well, no. It's incredibly important and well thought out and reasoned lyrical discussion of the show.
Wow, we don't have to read all these replies, do we?